Hello. Welcome back. It looks like they're ready to go again. Take a seat. Here we go.
That which brings me joy. Just imagine a bell like tinkling over there into the next century with its echoes. Not a lot has brought me joy this year. Especially working in a job where I was focused on a lot of numbers and a lot of papers related to the COVID-19 response. I'll leave it at that. But the one thing that always brought me joy, pretty much every night, in a way that's a little bit obsessive, I started reading books about the New Deal and about the arc of where American government could go to nationalize healthcare and help the people. Views my own. And I really enjoyed the views my own inimitable, irrepressible persona of the historian Thomas Frank, who wrote the 2004 book, What's the Matter with Kansas? So anyway, I started reading obsessively a lot of work by him. And Tom Gakin and Thomas Frank have the most joyful, like, hell of a toboggan ride, to quote The Simpsons, approach to the collapse of the New Deal and the need to reorganize the labor movement. And it's just completely charming. I watch videos of them every night where he just starts reading from political memoirs and about how people feel optimistic about technology running the government. He would go on for an hour just expounding without a single like or an in his voice, like a high school debate champion, about just whatever the hell he wanted to complain about. He would sit in a sweatshirt with very unruly, graying hair and talk about biking like he was depressed for hours. I felt like he was becoming like the surrogate for everything I couldn't say at work. So I'll do a clip of him, and imagine me listening to this like at 2 a.m. with a rosary in my hand. That's how like bad the situation was, and I was doing this like three nights a week. Here's him talking to Matt Taibbi and Katie Halper of Rolling Stone magazine on their podcast Useful Idiots in a segment ostensibly on his book list and liberal on the Obama administration, but here talking about comparison between Obama and Harry Truman. And you just got to imagine him, like, bouncing around with a headset in front of a bunch of books written about intellectual and cultural history in post-war America.
Harry Truman's the last president that didn't go to college. When Harry Truman finished being president, he went back home to Independence, Missouri, which is a suburb of Kansas City. And he didn't have a pension. He didn't have a source of income. And he wasn't rich. And, he moved back in with his mother-in-law and the reporters, followed him and they said to him, so Mr. President, what's the first thing you did when you got home? He's like, well, I carried the suitcases up to the attic.
It's the only thing that could reliably make me laugh and think. So to him and Tom Gagan, who's much more press shy and tends to like put it to the pen instead of audio, thank you guys for saving my medical career. Not even joking.
My name is Rafi. I'm a medical student. Something that's brought me a lot of joy this pandemic and in my life in general has been crafting. I have spent so much time knitting as I watch lectures, and I find that knitting really just creates this muscle memory where I am able to link what I'm learning into my physical body. But what's really brought me joy is sewing. I feel like I've been able to create things that I can send to those I love, and even if I can't see them or hug them right now, I'm able to share that I care about them. I've been sewing a lot of masks. I've made actually almost 500 masks now. And at this point, it's really just a way to keep a little bit of joy as we move into the next phase of this pandemic. I love walking around my school when we were in person and seeing all of the people that I cared about wearing different colorful representations of their personality, but that I had touched with my own hands. Here's a little bit of me sewing.
A couple months ago, I was honestly having a pretty hard time with everything that was going on. In addition to COVID, I actually broke my foot while on a walk outside. So I couldn't even really use exercise as a way to distract myself from everything that was happening. It was then that I turned to crochet as a way in which to restore order to my otherwise chaotic world. And putting together stitch after stitch has given me a huge sense of self-efficacy, of stability, tranquility, and even connection, because I've given all the things that I've crocheted to my nephews back home so that they can have a part of me with them, even though I don't get to see them often anymore. This is what crochet sounds like. Okay, crochet is a pretty quiet activity. There is something pretty special about having it just be you and the yarn and the needle. Right now I'm starting the piece. In other words, making something from nothing. In front of me is a mess of a ball of yarn. And by the end of it, there will be something that I made with my own hands that didn't exist before. Crochet reminds me that, you know what, I actually do matter. I can't really fix what's happening in the world, you know? I can't bring back all this time that feels lost. I can't be with my family. But I can make this tiny little elephant counting stitches as I go.
Lifting up the box down. It's in the bag and it's really heavy, which is amazing because it means that there's just so much produce in here. This is the Thanksgiving shipment, part of a CSA. It's kind of funny, it's kind of crazy, but I'm like obsessed with this weekly shipment of vegetables I get. One of the first things I do is I reach in the box for the letter. It's like a half page message that the farm sends with each box of vegetables. And Farmer Paul is such a good writer, and it's just so wonderful to read. Like, I feel so connected to him. Like, I'm obsessed with this farmer. What's kind of funny is that, like, I've taken more pictures of the vegetables I get from my CSA in the past 10 months than, like, almost anything else. I've got a bunch of carrots here, tons of onions and greens and then a bunch of potatoes as well. It has been such a joy and a little bit of an unexpected joy how much I'm obsessed with this box of vegetables.
I live for the very small things that give us pleasure. I know that living through many years has shown me that the larger events in our life make us very happy or very sad or have a dramatic impact on us. But sometimes it's the really small stuff, like staring at the ceiling, staring at the wall, walking outside and smelling something, like the 45 degree weather and the light rain. All of these things affect me. So I never actually thought that I would be an academic professor in a medical school or associate professor. And when I got promoted from assistant to associate professor, I wanted to do something for myself. Well, ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to have a really nice watch. Of course, I found them to be kind of ostentatious and a little bit braggadocious. But I still loved the idea of having something very special around your wrist that counts the seconds and the hours and the days and sort of makes you pay attention to the time. Of course, you can do that with any watch, but I wanted something that's a bit more involving. So I wanted a manual wind watch. The process of winding a watch makes you remember that you're actually setting yourself up for the future time that's about to come. So every morning I wake up, I take off my watch from my wrist, and I look at it, and I think, yeah, I'd like more time. It has the most gentle, fine click, and this is what it sounds like. And it's wound.
So I'm outside. It's still dark out. I really like it right now because it's quiet, peaceful. Everybody's waking up. And I can just think. As I walk, I just feel things lift. I think about the day, think about how much time has passed. We're coming on a full year of isolation and distancing and masking and everything. When I look around, everybody, everything, these cities, they want to go back. They want to go back to being, to living, to functioning, to doing what they did. They'll never be able to in the same way. Everything's changed.
So this year, I decided that I'm going to volunteer to work on the inpatient service for Christmas. You know, we do a whole Christmas block, and I decided I'm going to volunteer to work. I remember how it was to be a resident working on Christmas. I tried to, like, amp it up a little bit. So I decided I was going to get my team food. So we'd have a quote-unquote, you know, Christmas dinner. I bought a little gift. I think it was like some candy or something like that in a box for the security guard who's going to be working that night because, you know, they're by themselves on Christmas. It's like depressing. So I bought them a gift, you know, a little something for the night. And then there was this administrator who was like a Girl Scout troop leader. And she told us that she is going to, she has like a bunch of Christmas cards that were signed by her girls in the Girl Scouts group for us to hand out to all the patients in the hospital. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. And went that Christmas morning and started handing out Christmas cards to all of the patients on my inpatient service. And it was nice. It was nice. Most people, I mean, everybody appreciated it. But there's this one patient that I cannot forget. Now, this patient was a prisoner, and he was really, really mean. He would spit on nurses. Sometimes he would throw things at you. Occasionally, he would try to even hit somebody or just shake around. Like, he was just not nice. So I go into his room on Christmas. He just looks at me. It's like, what? And I was like, I have a Christmas card for you. So I handed him the Christmas card. And he kind of just looks at me and just stares at me for a second there. And then he opens up the Christmas card and looks at it. And he starts crying. I mean, this man had tears running down his cheek. I was a little stunned because I didn't expect that kind of response. I've never seen somebody get so emotional about getting a Christmas card before. Crying. He looks at me and he's like, nobody never gave me a Christmas card before. I ain't never got a Christmas card from nobody before. Thank you so much for this Christmas card. He just holds it and looks at it and says, thank you. And I said, you're welcome. And I left the room. I don't know how Christmas is going to be this year. I have no idea. But if I could do that for somebody on Christmas, I would consider this Christmas coming up a wonderful, wonderful Christmas.
Hey, radiologist. I first called you in mid-2019. I was working overnight, and I had this young woman patient who'd come in with this wildly high blood pressure, and we'd scanned her abdomen looking for a rare kind of adrenal tumor called a pheochromocytoma. They are wildly rare, and so I figured it was low probability, but I called you and said, would you mind looking at her abdomen? And you said, kind of grumpily, you said, everyone always asks us to look for pheos, we never find them. And then you said, hold on, it's a pheo. And then you paused and you said, I know there's a real person suffering here, but this is so cool. It's like you brought me the rarest kind of Pokemon. And after that, somehow, whenever I called radiology for a look at my images, it always seemed to be you. I figured you were another resident, because you always seemed to be on at night, and I was often on at night. And we gradually developed this kind of rapport. You had a nice voice. You were funny. We kind of had a joking back and forth. I'd call and I'd say, oh, hey, and you'd say, oh, hey, it's you. And I started joking with my friends about this secret friendship that I had with a radiologist who I'd never met. We met for the first time in March of 2020. I was working in the emergency room, and that was the time where we didn't have enough coronavirus tests. I'm sure you remember that time, radiologist. It was hard. Sometimes we'd scan people, get CTs, and look to see if they had the characteristic findings of COVID-19, the peripheral ground glass opacities. And I was working another night shift in the emergency room, and I saw your name on one of the CTs. And the thing about the ER is that the radiologists work right there, so you can kind of go say hi. And I thought, I'm going to do it in this time of COVID. I'm going to break the fourth wall and we're going to meet. So I opened the door and I said, hey. And you said, it's you. And I said, it's you. And what the senior radiologist must have thought, I do not know. But it was like we were old friends, just meeting for the first time. So I wanted to let you know, radiologist, that you've made my year a lot brighter. The sort of quixotic friendship that we had and that we have, it's really mattered to me. So thank you for everything that you're doing, and I'm sure I'll hear from you some night in the future.
2020, a year to remember for so many reasons. By the time we'd been locked down for 4 months, I was starting to lose my mind. Yes, I'd gotten great pleasure out of the intellectual challenge of learning about a new virus, but I was, in fact, losing my shit. I decided I had to create a list of COVID treasures. I included in that list the women I was learning to work with and becoming close friends with, the women I was doing a nightly Zoom exercise with, and the man that I knew from a restaurant where we single folks often got to know each other, that had left me a bobblehead of Dr. Fauci, thinking early on in the pandemic that his doctor friend from the restaurant would enjoy having that. He was right. What I didn't know was that a bigger treasure was to come. I am a very touchy person, and I hadn't been touched for 4 months. I was single, living alone, and had no one in my bubble. I wrote a short personals ad that I never intended to post, seeking mature adult for hugging, out of doors, both masked, 5-minute limit, frequency to be negotiated. Finally, after several weeks, a friend I had known for over 28 years said, "Can men apply?" I laughed because though I'm a lesbian, I have many men friends, and I was thinking just a hug, not anything romantic at all. Of course men can answer, "Your hugs are fabulous." We went to the park across the street and had a hug. Immediately, I felt like we were breathing in sync, and before the 5 minutes were up, I think our heartbeats were in sync. I have not felt so good in so long. We had a few episodes of hugging in the park, and at one point, he suggested perhaps he could come over. I told him he couldn't come over because it wasn't worth it for 5 minutes. And when he asked why he was limited to 5 minutes, I reminded him, "COVID, baby, that's why we're doing this in the first place." The next time he came over, he had an N95 mask. I realized that with an N95 mask, we could perhaps spend more time together, and maybe even indoors. I suggested that he come over after a particularly hard day at work for just a longer spooning session. It became clear he was interested in more, and I was confused because I thought I'd been clear that I didn't want it to be anything more than that. I also decided, what the heck? I may have been a lesbian for 23 years, but we're in the midst of a pandemic, and perhaps I should be mature enough to see if this situation allowed for both of us to get what we needed. The next day, I called him and asked him if he wanted a hug, and then clarified, "It's a booty call. Maybe I'm not as much of a lesbian as I thought I was, and maybe this can work." He came over. It worked just fine, though any thought I had had of COVID companionship being all that we had was burst when he started quoting poetry and talking about his feelings for me. I didn't think I'd ever date a man again, and I wouldn't have considered if it weren't for COVID. But I've never been treated so well. I don't think I've ever been loved so honestly. I guess I'm not a lesbian, and that's just fine, because 2020 and COVID have given me the love of my life.
I don't care if the house is packed or the strings of lights are broken. I don't care if the gifts are wrapped or there's nothing here to open. Love is not a toy, and no paper will conceal it. Love is simply joy that I'm home. I don't care if the carpet's stained, we've got food upon our table. I don't care if it's gonna rain, our little room is warm and stable. Love is who we are, and no season can contain it. Love would never fall for that. Why so scared that you'll mess it up when perfection keeps you haunted? All we need is your best, my love. That's all anyone ever wanted. Love is how we do. Let no judgment overrule it. Love, I look to you and I sing.
When I was little in Syria, my grandma and I would peel pomelos during the winter nights next to my grandpa while he chain smoked. The pomelos came from a pomelo tree in our neighbor's backyard. And she would give us as many pomelos as we wanted. For those of you who don't know what pomelo is, it's basically a giant citrus fruit with a very thick rind. It's green on the outside. And inside you have a pulp that is not juicy. It's not like juicy like an orange or a grapefruit. You could even call it dry, although when you bite into the pulp, the juice is all inside of it. So you can peel a pomelo and have no juice drip all over your hands. And as soon as you bite into its fleshy pulp, that's when the juice explodes in your mouth. I remember those winter nights fondly. My grandma and I, we would sit on the ground on the winter rugs. We only had rugs out during the winter, as in my hometown. That's what I associate pomelos with, those warm winter nights.
So I'm not unique in this, but I love Christmas and I love everything about the holiday, the decorations, the way the Christmas tree smells. And so this year I actually put up my Christmas tree before Thanksgiving because we can all use as much holiday cheer as possible. And something that's really unique is that my mom, when we were kids, she would let us pick out one Hallmark ornament, sometimes two, every year. And she packed them all away, and then last year she shipped them to me. So for the first time, I'm decorating my Christmas tree with all of the traditional ornaments that I think of as going on my Christmas tree back home. And some of these ornaments, you can just trace a path through all your obsessions, right? And so this is from when I wanted to be an astronaut. You can't see it, but it's a rocket with lights. Lifting off. And here I have another, just in case you think my obsession with space was short-lived.
Roger, 0-G, and I feel fine. Capsule is turning around. Oh, that view is tremendous.
That's the Freedom 7. And I have really nerdy ones, like the Star Trek one.
Shuttlecraft to Enterprise. Spock here. Happy holidays. Live long.
And then your more traditional ones, like this was always a childhood favorite. It's a little answering machine hanging from the tree.
Ho, ho, ho! I'm out packing my sleigh now, so be sure to leave your Christmas wishes. Wait for the jingle bells.
So every night when I come home and I see my tree all lit up with my, frankly, extremely vintage Christmas ornaments, I remember that there were so many good times behind us, and there are going to be so many good times ahead of us. We just gotta wait a little bit longer. Happy holidays.
I'm just heading upstairs in my house. This is where I live with my husband of 35 years, my grown child, who's 31, and my son-in-law, who's just practicing piano, maybe you heard that. Laundry's running, my son's still at work, my daughter's upstairs in her office in her bedroom. I'm sitting down with my luggage rack and a box and my laptop, the light on my face. But looking out the window, I see the last evening's light on the trees. So beautiful. I spent 3 weeks sick as a dog in this room with COVID, barely breathing, wondering what would happen. But now this room is a source of joy. One of the brilliant and beautiful things about COVID, in my opinion, has been Zoom. Not the Zoom that we all know about, those endless meetings and the way that we have to connect. I was introduced to my first Zoom meeting, which was actually my Uncle Steve's memorial. He died in February and we couldn't travel for his memorial, so we had it by Zoom. And I don't know why, but there was something miraculous in this Quaker-style memorial where I was able to look at each face as they told stories about this human that I loved my whole life. And the next thing I discovered was this thing called the Low Bar Corral. And the Low Bar Corral used to meet in person, but then they moved the whole damn thing online. On June 30th, they played this song, which I'm gonna sing along with. You'll see what it's like. You can sing along with me if you know the words, actually. So here we go.
Which reminds me of this amazing quote by blues Henri Amiel, who said, "Life is short. We don't have much time to gladden the hearts of those who walk this way
Guess
with us.
Guess what song it's going
to
be.
So I'll be give swift you a to love the and make haste to be kind."
Here we go.
Here we go. Two, three.
Got it. I'm going to sing. You're going to too.
I see in my rain. Do I have to keep on talking till I can't go on? Why do you see it your way? Run the risk of knowing that our love may still be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still you think that it's all right. Think of what I'm saying. We can work it out and get it straight and say goodnight. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friend. I have always thought that it's a crime. So I will ask you once again. Try to see it my way. You tell if I am right or I am wrong. I see it your way. There's a chance that we might fall apart before too long. We can work it out. We can work it out.
I'm thinking about this time when my son had his first Christmas. He was a baby, and I had dutifully put all of his gifts inside of gift bags, you know, with pretty paper kind of peeking out of the top. I remember taking a picture of it and sending it to my sister Deanna so that she would praise me. And immediately, instead of her texting back, she called me and said, "What in the hell is this? Why do you not have any wrapped gifts under your tree?" And she was laughing hysterically, not like with me, at me. And I said, "Well, you know, I suck at wrapping gifts." And she said, "Listen, kids like to rip shit and they like to rip open a box. You can't be putting bags under the tree. Now that you have kids, you really, really must know how to wrap gifts." Now, I have to admit that this kind of goes back years. You know, Deanna once took a job in a department store as a gift wrap person. She was always a person who was amazing at wrapping gifts, you know, with a ruler and making the edges nice and pretty. She picked the right bows. And the tradition in our household was always to, you know, leave the tree empty. And then, voila, I wake up on Christmas morning to a bunch of beautifully wrapped gifts. November of 2012, my sister Deanna died of a sudden cardiac death. a lot of times people think that when you've lost someone, especially as the holidays come around, that the hardest part is just sort of not having them there for, you know, the fun and the laughs, and all that is true. But I have learned since Deanna's departure that there are always these them things that you just can't replace. And I acutely miss my sister whenever it's late on Christmas Eve and I'm trying to wrap gifts and woefully failing at it. I think the first year after she passed, I wept so much that I ended up just sticking bows on top of the gifts unwrapped because I just couldn't do it. The following year, my younger sister surprised me and came to Atlanta to spend Christmas. Side by side, we sat watching Frozen, drinking Prosecco and talking shit, wrapping gifts just like Deanna, straight edge out. I think Deanna would have approved.
I have three daughters, and I've spent many nights telling my oldest daughter stories ever since she was a little kid. We've made up stories about beach adventures or exploring hidden jungles and finding waterfalls. But over time and with two other children, those storytime adventures have become less and less frequent and have become more tasks. When it's been a long day with an evening clinic, or I had a particularly stressful encounter with colleagues or patients, or more recently with all of the things that have been happening with COVID and the extra anxiety and bandwidth that I've lost, she'll ask me for a bedtime story. The answer has more often than not been no, or more commonly, let me check in on you in 15 minutes, because inevitably in 15 minutes she will be asleep. But tonight I got home from an evening clinic that was somewhat unsatisfying. My kids were tucked in bed and was looking forward to honestly just having a meal and a little bit of quiet time. And she asked again, "Mama, can you tell me a story?" My instinct again was to say no, because I'm tired. But I crawled over my youngest that was sitting on the floor and scooched myself in into the bed next to her and the youngest and cuddled up next to her and started spinning a tale for her. It was a great story about an adventure that she was going on with her sisters. And in that moment of quiet with me and her, living off this amazing fantasy, the doctor in me thought about her neuronal pathways at this age of 8 and how these moments of security and connection and imagination and flight, how they were calming her neuronal pathways, much in the same way that they are calming mine and building this bridge across these two worlds and this bond across mother and child. And nothing else mattered in that moment except that I was her mother. I was holding her and we were allowing ourselves to imagine and be somewhere else together.
Can you put this up there?
Yeah, you ready to cuddle? So there's this amazing little girl called Lizzie. One day, much to Lizzie's surprise, there was this little lizard. And Lizzie had never
silent
seen a
lizard. Night, holy night, all is calm. Bright round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant so tender and
That's our show. You've been listening to the Nocturnus Holiday Special. I want to thank producer and head of story development, Adelaide Papazolo, medical student producer, Rafaela Posner, and composer, Janae E. Huge thanks to all of you healthcare workers who submitted your stories and music, which made this episode possible. This holiday special included contributions from Alex Rains, Alina Kong, Brad Hunter, Brian Bobby Chong, Catherine Forrest, Dan Marriott, Dawn Marie Wadley, Elsa Aliswad, Emmeline Sun, Greta Pang, Theodore Pang, Jacqueline Flores, Jessica Briggs, John Donny, Kathy Lynn, Katie Brooks, Kimberly Manning, Lily Stern and Brothers, Lori Edwards, Miriam Nawas, Marshall Florent, Mike Reed, Natasha Spottiswood, Nick Iverson, Patrick McMurray, Rafaela Posner, Risa Lewis, Syed Hoda, Teja Kompala, Tina Munjol, Siganish Selamayab, and other healthcare workers who chose to remain anonymous. Thank you for sharing your stories. Thanks also to executive producer Ali Block, director of operations Rebecca Groves, and communications specialist Cora Becker. Our original artwork is by Lindsay Mound, and our original theme song was composed by Joseph Monroe. The Nocturnus is made possible by the California Medical Association, the Patrick J. McGovern Foundation, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, and people like you, who have donated through our website and Patreon page. Thank you for supporting our work. If you'd like to add your voice to one of our future projects, visit our website at thenocturnus.com, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our show. I'm Emily Silverman, and we are The Nocturnus. See you in 2021.